From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Amidst Black Lives Matter protests aimed at police brutality this past year were numerous right-wing armed groups. One of those groups, the Oath Keepers, is among the most prominent. The group of mostly men claiming to defend the American Republic, the U.S. Constitution, and liberty itself often show up dressed in military-style fatigues, armed. Many fear they will appear at the polls ahead of and during the November 3rd election. My next guest has written the first book-length investigation into the Oath Keepers. Sam Jackson is an assistant professor in the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany. He joins me to discuss his new book, simply called Oath Keepers. Subtitle is Patriotism and the Edge of Violence in a Right-Wing Anti-Government Group. Welcome to the program, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the origins of this organization. It's not that old. It's a little over a decade old. Who founded it and what was his original goal?
Sure. The group was founded in 2009. The primary figure behind the group is a man called Stuart Rhodes. He founded the group, as I said, in 2009 with a few friends who throughout 2008 began to talk about founding a group like this. Rhodes is a interesting man. He is a graduate of Yale Law School. He's a former Army paratrooper. He worked for Ron Paul when Ron Paul was a congressman from Texas. But around 2008, 2009, he started to get the sense, it seems, that the moment was ripe for a group to emerge that would advocate for goals more directly and would work outside of what we might think of as the conventional political system. So in 2009, the group launched with a muster on the Lexington Green outside of Boston, Massachusetts, the site of the first battle in the Revolutionary War. And they explicitly chose that location and had a number of speeches that day that were really meant to suggest that Americans today face similar threats of tyranny, such as those faced by those who fought against the British in the 18th century.
You write in your book that contemporary right-wing extremism in the U.S. contains three primary categories: racist extremism, nativist extremism, and anti-government extremism. I imagine, and of course, there's a lot of intersections between those three and overlap, and I imagine that the Oath Keepers are primarily in the anti-government aspect of it, but not exclusively?
That's correct. I would place them primarily within the anti-government extremist category. They do have some pretty virulent nativist tendencies that run throughout some of their ideas and rhetoric and that are advocated more explicitly by some of their members, though.
And what about the issue of racism? Because racism and nativism go hand in hand, unfortunately, in this country. Well, not unfortunately, just is what it is, I guess.
Sure. So I advocate for making a distinction between groups that organize around a perceived racial identity and those that don't do so. Mm. When we think about right-wing extremism in America, we often think of groups like the KKK or Aryan Nations or neo-Nazis or various entities like these. And these groups have an explicit perceived white racial identity at the heart of their organization. And they come together around a perception that that white racial identity is under threat from other racial groups. It's certainly true that there is racism and bigotry within Oath Keepers and other anti-government extremist groups. But for the most part, these groups don't organize around a perceived racial identity in the same way that white supremacists do.
So are there non-whites in Oath Keepers? What's the racial makeup of this, and racial and really gender makeup of this organization? I imagine that it's mostly white men, but I'm going by what I see from the outside.
I sort of rely on the same kind of information. It seems to me that the group is overwhelmingly white and male, but not exclusively so. There are women who have been prominent figures at various things that the group has done. And the group is also eager to promote its members of color. For example, they featured an interview with a Navy veteran who's an African-American on the front page of their website for a number of years. And they really point to these kind of people to say, we are not a racist organization. They adopt this position or posture of colorblindness. And of course, colorblindness does not mean that one is not racist or that one does not support racism or have any racist implications in your ideas. But it really goes back to this idea that Oath Keepers does not organize around a perceived racial identity.
Some of what you're saying sounds reminiscent of how the Proud Boys, the group that has been in the news quite a bit because Trump was asked about it, how they are perceived and how they too have some prominent members that are non-white. And even among Trump supporters, we often see a minority of people of minority background being propped up as a, you know, in tokenistic ways to disprove accusations of being racist. But, you know, usually it's just a facade.
That's certainly true. And I think it's worth noting that, as you say, many of these, many actors who might best be understood as racist actors, as white supremacists, will sometimes try to deny that label and reject it. And they will point to, as you say, token members of different demographic groups to prove that they are not bigoted in various ways. I do think that it's a little bit different with Oath Keepers in the fact, again, I'm just gonna keep saying it, they're not organized around a racial identity the same way that a lot of these are.
Sure.
Proud Boys is a little bit complicated as well because they have, I think they describe themselves as Western chauvinists, which seems to have some clear racial connotations. But that one's a little bit tricky and a little bit difficult to think through.
So let's talk about the philosophical or ideological underpinning of the Oath Keepers as an anti-government group. What exactly is the basis of their organizing? I mean, I imagine that they are less of an anarchist strain and more of a libertarian strain.
Absolutely. And it's also worth saying that most of my argument within the book really is focused on the pre-2016 era of the group. The 2016 was an important pivot point for the group with the rise of Donald Trump, and perhaps that's something we'll talk about mm-hmm. in a few minutes. Prior to 2016, though, the real idea at the heart of Oath Keepers is a perception that government is tyrannical and a sense that Americans need to be ready to take up arms to fight off a tyrannical government if that government comes to their door. That's really a boiled down version of the ideas at the heart of the group.
They played a role in the occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Tell me a little bit about that incident and what it represented in this organization's history.
Sure. In early 2016, a number of people who we might think of as anti-government extremists had traveled to Oregon to protest the resentencing of a couple of ranchers who were convicted of arson on federal land. They interpreted that resentencing as two convictions for the same crime, which it was not, but that was sort of a rallying cry for them and led a bunch of people to travel to this remote part of Oregon. After several days of that protesting, the ranchers who were resentenced announced that they were going to willingly go back to jail to carry out the rest of their sentence. And that led a group of people led by Ammon Bundy to travel to the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge about an hour away to occupy that location in what Ammon Bundy described as a hard stand against the federal government. Interestingly, the Oath Keepers pretty quickly came out against the occupation. They said that it was a bad decision for a couple of reasons. First, they were worried about the connections with the ranchers who had been resentenced to prison. They said that those individuals decided to go back to jail and it was their right to do so. And the Oath Keepers were also concerned that occupying the refuge was this very provocative and aggressive move. They would, in writing about the occupation, they said, those who are involved in this occupation are not following the model of the Revolutionary War. They're not taking primarily defensive action within their own communities. Instead, they're undertaking this aggressive action.
So they pride themselves on being a defensive group.
They frame all of their rhetoric around violence as being defensive. And this actually played out more in the Malheur refuge occupation within a couple of weeks as federal law enforcement gathered in the area surrounding Malheur refuge. Oath Keepers and other groups like them started to worry that law enforcement would be overly aggressive with the occupiers. So some members of the group joined with some local Three Percenters groups to form what they called PPN, the Pacific Patriots Network. And this coalition group decided that they would arm up and go to the refuge, and they would act as an armed buffer between law enforcement and the occupiers. They very explicitly said, we're not participating in the occupation. We think it's a bad idea. But they also said, if any sort of violence goes down here because government is too aggressive, because law enforcement is too aggressive, we will be there to intervene if necessary.
And I want to ask about the relationship with law enforcement soon. But first, what does patriotism mean to this group, the Oath Keepers? If they are an anti-government group, what is their critique of the government based on? And how did they view this idea of patriotism?
I should say that they would reject the label of anti-government when they're faced, and when they and other similar groups and actors are faced with that label, they say, we're not anti-government, we're anti-bad government. I still use the label anti-government because they see the overwhelming majority of government as bad. As you mentioned a moment ago, you can think of them as libertarians. Actually, you could better think of them as radical libertarians. They want a dramatically smaller government that is much less involved in day-to-day life. So for them, their patriotism really comes back to this idea of national identity that's rooted in the Revolutionary War and resistance to tyranny. And it's this idea of government needs to be controlled, government needs to be watched to make sure that it doesn't infringe on people's rights. And when we see government acting in a tyrannical way, the single most American thing we can do is to push back against that government.
So what about relationships with the police? I mentioned that groups like Oath Keepers have been showing up at Black Lives Matter protests. What is their relationship with the police? Because we do know that some of these right-wing militia groups are not just welcomed by the police or seen positively by the police, sometimes often work in conjunction with the police. What about the Oath Keepers?
Oath Keepers has actually made it a priority to try to recruit current and former law enforcement and military to join the organization. Now, it's not clear to me how successful they are in that. It certainly is the case that we have seen some current law enforcement who are in the group who have faced disciplinary sanctions, for example, for wearing an Oath Keepers patch or having a hat in their patrol car or things like that. And I think it's fair to characterize this group as being part of the Blue Lives Matter coalition that has risen up in response to Black Lives Matter. This idea that police are engaging in dangerous jobs and they deserve our support. And as you noted, in some of these protests, we've seen some degree of coordination and displays of support from law enforcement towards actors like Oath Keepers. But it's interesting that there's a contradiction here, because Oath Keepers perceives government as being tyrannical in many cases. And the first line of tyranny that would come to their doors, if such a thing were to happen, would probably be in the form of law enforcement. And this is something that they actually have addressed a couple of times. Hmm. For example, in the Bundy Ranch standoff of 2014, some of their members went there and participated in that activity. And this was a situation where armed anti-government extremists were very close to engaging in a firefight with armed law enforcement.
We mentioned the Proud Boys earlier because Trump was asked about it in the debate that he did with Joe Biden in late September, but he might, you know, he could have been asked about the Oath Keepers as well. What is the relationship that the Oath Keepers have to the Trump presidency? How do they view his presidency?
That's an interesting question, and it's not as straightforward as we might think by looking at the events of the past couple of years. When Trump declared his presidency and as he started to participate in Republican primary debates and later even in general election debates against Hillary Clinton, Oath Keepers as an organization never came out formally to endorse Donald Trump. And in fact, in a couple of cases, they expressed some concern about his candidacy. In particular, they worried that he was advocating for some gun control policies that they saw as violating the Second Amendment, things around red flag laws, for example. However, it was pretty quick that it's the membership of Oath Keepers coalesced behind Trump, and it didn't take long for the organization as a whole to implicitly do the same. Part of this is because Donald Trump's opponent in that election was Hillary Clinton. And for anti-government extremism writ large, for what I call the Patriot Militia movement, of which Oath Keepers is part, the Clinton name is anathema to them.
Wow.
Emerging in the 1990s, which is when the first wave of the Patriot Militia movement took shape and emerged, this was during the time of the Clinton administration, of Bill Clinton's administration. And there were a few landmark moments that really set up this antagonistic relationship. The deadly standoffs at Ruby Ridge and at Waco, where federal law enforcement engaged in gun battles with various American civilians, and where both members of law enforcement and some of these civilians were killed, really defined for much of this movement that federal government is willing and perhaps even eager to use violence to violate the rights of Americans. And shortly after those events, more federal gun control bills were passed during the Clinton administration. And gun control is a hot topic for anti-government extremists. It's one of the ways that they anticipate that tyranny will sort of spread in America.
Finally, why should we... why did you study this organization? There is a very large universe of an expanding universe of right-wing extremism. And of course, obviously you spent years studying this group, but why the Oath Keepers? What does it represent? What does it tell us about America today?
I think there are a few reasons why a group like Oath Keepers is worth attention, and these are sort of the reasons that at least implicitly led me to study them in such depth for so long. The first is right-wing extremism is really a problem in America. As you mentioned, I see three categories of right-wing extremism in the US, the racist extremists, nativist extremists, and anti-government extremists. Racist extremists have gotten the most attention, and rightfully so. Racist right-wing extremism has been a source of intense violence, and it's just hugely problematic. Anyone who studies this knows that just empirically that is the case. Much less attention has been paid, though, to anti-government extremism in particular. And a lot of the research sort of made this false assumption that anti-government extremism was a subset of racist extremism. So I felt that groups like Oath Keepers were not given the detailed investigation that they deserve by scholars and by observers of American politics. And the second thing that I would add to that is I think Oath Keepers taps into or perhaps feeds off of this common thought in American political culture, this common sense that politics is about conflict. Ruth Bronstein is a sociologist from the University of Connecticut who's written an excellent book on looking at Tea Party activism and interfaith, this leftist religious social movement from early in the Obama administration, looking at their forms of political engagement. And she finds that the Tea Party fundamentally believed that politics is about conflict and that politicians need to be watched by citizens to make sure that they don't do things that are inappropriate. Corruption, tyranny, etc.
I mean, the idea is sound because, of course, the politicians work for the public. Obviously, they should have their feet held to the fire. There should be a sort of not violently antagonistic, but at least rhetorically antagonistic relationship between politicians and the public. But do they just take it too far?
I would actually push back on that a little bit. What Bronstein does so well is in studying these two different types of political actors is showing that the other side of this is actually a cooperative understanding of politics, where citizens see themselves as partners with politicians in addressing public problems. This doesn't mean that we sort of have a rose-tinted view of the world and we don't recognize the possibility of corruption. But it's a fundamentally different understanding where politicians are not inherently our enemies. They are people that we can work with. That, I think, is a much more productive model of politics. It's a much better way to approach things if we recognize that there are community-wide problems that can only be addressed with community-wide solutions. Think of COVID. If we have a fundamentally antagonistic or conflictual understanding of politicians within the COVID world, why do we trust politicians to do anything to help us get through this pandemic? Why do we trust them to help us with public health interventions? If, on the other hand, we see them as partners, then not to say that we're naive, but we trust that, for example, CDC is trying to help us get through this.
Right. I mean, so there's one thing about government agencies and another about elected officials. Well, finally, how worried should we be leading up to the election about Oath Keepers and where they might show up? Trump has actively recruited supporters saying that they should be poll watchers to join the army of Trump. That kind of militia style language is consistent with their culture. He has even offered, MAGA hats and colored in the fatigues, military style fatigues, as a thank you for donations to join his army. And the Republican Party has actively recruited poll watchers. There are already reports in Florida that there might have been security guards that they think were armed and in a tent near a polling place that the guards say were hired by the Trump campaign. Although, of course, that doesn't quite sound like Oath Keepers. But should we be worried about Oath Keepers at the polls?
That's a good question. I think I could offer two responses. The first is that Oath Keepers has already announced that they have plans to be out on election day. They haven't specified what exactly that means. But keep in mind that their understandings of legitimate violence are often framed around defensive violence. So I would not expect any sort of aggressive attack from organized by Oath Keepers. Also, I think it's worth stepping back and perhaps not looking at specific organizations, but thinking about the movement that Oath Keepers is part of, this patriot militia movement where people have a real fondness for guns and a real sense that certain political conditions might justify the use of violence. It might not be Oath Keepers who are armed up at polling stations intimidating voters, but it might be another similar group, or it might be unaffiliated individuals taking this action upon themselves. I do, however, want to say that I worry that too much attention to that sort of thing now could have an effect of discouraging people from voting, and I want to strongly push back against that. Go out and vote. It's your constitutional right, and it's really incredibly important. Be aware of your surroundings. Don't be naive. Mary McCord from Georgetown, I'm forgetting the name of her group, they have released a series of fact sheets for different states about what citizens should do if they see armed individuals at polls. So if you're concerned about this, if you think it's a possibility in your area, if you're planning on voting in person on election day, it might be worth Googling Mary McCord. And
it's the Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection. And we will link to the fact sheets for all 50 states that they have put out that people can print out for their state and take with them as they go to vote. Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you with the book.
It was my pleasure.
My guest has been Sam Jackson, assistant professor in the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany. We've been discussing his new book, Oath Keepers, Patriotism and the Edge of Violence in a Right-Wing Anti-Government Group. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.